"My dear Mr. Rhoda," she wrote easily, "I have learned that Dr. Drinker made an investigation last spring. I have heard nothing of the result, but have been looking with great interest to the time when it would be published." A troubled look crossed Arthur Rhoda's affluently rounded face. The Drinker investigation, that was another thorn in his side. He'd so looked forward to the delivery of the doctor's report last June. Here, finally, would be the scientific proof, the unchallengeable confirmation of what he knew to be the truth, that these grim illnesses and deaths had absolutely nothing to do with his firm. He had been stunned when he read the covering letter Drinker had enclosed with the report. "We believe that the trouble which has occurred is due to radium," Drinker had written almost a year ago, on 3rd of June 1924. "It would, in our opinion, be unjustifiable for you to deal with the situation through any other method of attack." Well, that was unexpected. The Drinkers had delivered a provisional opinion on 29th of April, following their initial academic research, that it would seem that radium is the probable cause of the trouble. But that was before they'd even returned to the plant, and Rhoda had been certain that further study would prove them wrong. Yet the final report hadn't made for better reading. "In our opinion, so great an incidence among these employees of this unusual disease cannot be a coincidence, but must be dependent on some type of bone damage occasioned by the employment." The Drinkers had methodically gone through the paint's ingredients, dismissing each one in turn as non-toxic. But at radium, they declared there was ample evidence of the dangers of overexposure. "The only constituent of the luminous material which can do harm," the Drinkers concluded, "must be the radium." They even gave a detailed hypothesis of what they thought was happening inside the women as a result of their exposure. Radium, they noted, had a similar chemical nature to calcium. Thus radium, if absorbed, might have a preference for bone as a final point of fixation. Radium was what one might call a bone seeker, just like calcium, and the human body is programmed to deliver calcium straight to the bones to make them stronger. Essentially, radium had masked itself as calcium and, fooled, the girls' bodies had deposited it inside their bones. Radium was a silent stalker, hiding behind that mask, using its disguise to burrow deep into the women's jaws and teeth. As Drinker had read in the scientific literature, radium, since the beginning of the century, had been known to cause serious flesh wounds. It was why workers exposed to large amounts of radium dressed themselves in heavy lead aprons and wielded ivory-tipped tongs. Why lab workers at Radium Dial were restricted in the amount of time they could spend in its presence. It was why Dr. von Sohotsky didn't have the tip of his left index finger anymore. Why Dr. Lehman, the chief chemist in his former company, had lesions all over his hands. Why von Sohotsky's partner, Willis, no longer had a thumb. The impact it had externally could easily kill a man, as Pierre Curie had noted back in 1903. That was the effect it had on the outside. Now imagine the impact of it once it had craftily concealed its way inside your bones. "Radium, once deposited in bone," wrote Drinker in his report, "would be in a position to produce peculiarly effective damage, many thousand times greater than the same amount outside." It was radium, lurking in Molly Maggia's bones, that had caused her jaw to splinter. It was radium, making itself at home in Hazel Kuza. It had eaten away at her skull until her jawbones had holes riddled right through them. It was radium, shooting out its constant rays, that was battering Marguerite Carlo's mouth even at this moment. It was radium that had killed Irene and Helen and so many more. It was radium, the drinkers said, that was the problem.